you've never studied the book, The Song of Songs, I recommend that you do that at some point and read commentaries about it. It's a very difficult book to understand, but if you spend about a year and a half studying it, you get the main points. And so whenever I hear that song, it just like really moves me. If you go on my Gift of Grace Ministries website, there's an audio teaching on each of the chapters of Song of Songs. And it was putting together, it's made from two different commentaries. Actually three different commentaries. One that was like ancient from one of the church fathers, one from the Middle Ages, and one from the 20th century. Of course, that was a long time ago now, too. Most of us were born in the 20th century. I think everybody here, right? Some of us were born right in the middle of the 20th century. Anyway, when I put this PowerPoint together, and usually it's hours and hours over 3 days, this came together over a period of about 2 hours. And I was so moved while I was making it that I couldn't wait to do it. So here we are. And it's called God So Near, and it's going to be a parallel set of passages from the Old Testament, specifically from the book of Deuteronomy, which actually is my third favorite book after Hebrews and Romans. Love Deuteronomy. And love studying the Torah. And you can hear most of the Torah study on that website too. But and then there's going to be parallel passages from the New Testament, from the New Covenant, from the Brit Hadashah, whatever you like to call it, the New Testament, to make it easier for everybody to know what we're talking about. You know, Joan always tells me, you know, if I call people by their Hebrew names, like if you call Isaiah Yeshayahu, people sitting in the seats go, who's he talking about? Or if you call St. Paul Shaul, which was his Hebrew name, I mean, people don't know you're talking about Paul, and everybody gets confused. But anyway, there's going to be a parallel passages that show what actually happens when Messiah comes, what actually happens when the new covenant comes. And we're going to start in Deuteronomy chapter 4. And if you have never studied Deuteronomy, I don't even know what to say. You know, Deuteronomy is the second, the law. Deutero comes from the Greek word for two. And nomos is the Greek word for law. So when they wrote the Septuagint, they called this the second law. And in Hebrew, it's called Devarim. The books of the Torah have different names in Hebrew. We're used to the Greek names. So the Hebrews usually use the first word or two of the book to name the book. So that's kind of interesting and a gee whiz kind of thing. And you can think about that at your leisure. But Deuteronomy 4, verse 7. For what great nation is there that has God so near to it? Okay, keep in mind God and near. I'm going to highlight some words to keep in mind as we go forward. As the Lord our God is to us, for whatever reason we may call upon him. And what great nation is there that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are in all this law which I set before you this day? Now, this is Moses talking. The difference between Deuteronomy and the other four books of the Torah are that in Deuteronomy, it's Moses presenting the information, not God presenting it. I mean, God is presenting it, but Moses is actually saying it in his own words. Whereas in the other books, it's God presenting the information. So, what nation is it that has God so near to us that we can call on him? You know, when we say the Shema at the beginning, The Shema is what separated Israel from all the other nations of the earth, right? All our ancestors were pagan Gentiles, right? So my ancestors were running around worshiping sun gods and moon gods, and, you know, all our ancestors were worshiping wind gods and rocks and, you know, whatever. And but the Israelites had the true covenant. They had the true God. What other nation has the true God? Nobody. Nobody. This is why after Messiah, the Jewish believers were confused that Gentiles were coming in and accepting Jesus. They weren't sure what to do with this. Because after all, Messiah was for them, the Jews, not for the Gentiles. So God had revealed himself to the Israelites through the Torah, through the prophets. We have no way to know what God is like. You know, the first few verses of the book of Hebrews tells us that in the past, God revealed himself through the patriarchs, through the prophets, so that we would know about him. And all those people got a piece of information, and as time went on, they kind of put it together. And then the writer says, but in these last days, God's son has become the ultimate messenger, basically. So we have the ultimate messenger. So he spoke to people, the people in the wilderness, in a very personal way. Keep that in mind, personal way, God speaks to them. They heard his voice. Moses' face glowed when he came out of the tent or down from the mountain. And, you know, people said, dude, you got to do something about that face, because they didn't have sunglasses, so they covered his face. I mean, if you were sleeping in a tent near Moses, you know, the light was coming out through the tent. You had to go cover his face so you could sleep. Ooh, this is a tough audience here. So he spoke to them in a very personal way, and he provided for them. Every day, except Shabbat, came the manna. When they needed water, the water came. When they needed meat, the quails came. Whatever it was. And, you know, they got tired of manna, but it had all the nutritional things you need to live. And you could do anything with it. You could bake it, you could fry it, you could beat it, you could put peanut butter on it. Put peanut butter on it. No, they didn't have peanut butter. But toast it. So he provided for them all the way. So remember the word provided. And he also gave them a destiny. You're going to a land. Like he took Abraham to the land. He says, you guys are going to this land. And it's a land of milk and honey. That doesn't mean much to us. You know, to us that sounds kind of silly. But it's a fertile land that's very productive. And that's where you guys are going. And not only am I going to give you that land, but there's people living there now. And I'm going to push them out of the way. You won't even have to worry about it. I'm going to push them out of the way. And you're going to live in cities you didn't build. You're going to eat from vineyards you didn't plant. You're going to drink from cisterns you didn't dig. Everything's going to be set for you. Provision. Keep that in mind. So he spoke with them, and sometimes they were scared. Like at Mount Sinai, they were afraid. They said, we can't deal with this. We don't want to hear God anymore. Just have him talk to Moses, and Moses, you tell us what he tells you. We can't deal with all this. So he spoke. They saw signs and wonders. Nobody else saw signs and wonders. Nobody else. People in Greece, no signs and wonders. I mean, this is pre, you know, Roman Empire and stuff, but people in Italy, no signs and wonders. People in Turkey, no signs and wonders. They saw signs and wonders. They walked out and picked up the manna. They saw Moses speak to the rock and water came out. And they experienced his holiness. Keep that in mind, experienced his holiness. They experienced it because he said, Nothing unholy can approach me. He set all the conditions for how he can be approached. You don't just go up to the tabernacle any old way you feel like. You don't just say, hey, I'm going to go see what's going on behind that veil. Like, what's the big deal about this? Because you were struck dead if you did that. Specific instructions on everything that was built, what color it was, what it was built out of, what the decorations were, where it was put. Oh, let's just put this menorah, let's just put it over here instead of over here. No, everything had to be exactly, because nothing unholy could approach him. And the veil was there to separate the holy from the unholy, which were the people. Okay? So keep that in mind. Experience his holiness. And they saw deliverance. Keep that in mind. Deliverance. They saw deliverance out of slavery in Egypt. God doesn't tell them, start making weapons, start killing Egyptians. You guys need to train for guerrilla warfare. And after you've killed enough Egyptians over a long enough period of time, the Egyptians will say, enough, let's let them go. No. He said, Moses, get everybody together. You're going to kill some lambs, and then we're going. Huh? All they had to do was show up. They didn't have to do anything. So keep that in mind. They saw deliverance. They saw the uniqueness of what they had. The Egyptians didn't have it. The Midianites didn't have it. The Amorites didn't have it. When they got to the land and encountered the people I call the Ites, you know, the Canaanites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, and the Mosquitobites, and the Megabites. So when they encountered the Ites, and God said, have nothing to do with those people, they knew those people were not covenant people. The Israelites were the only ones that were the covenant people, and it was unique. And it involved obedience. And there was a problem, there were consequences to disobedience. Remember, there's only 613 laws, and if you violate one, it's the same as violating all of them. This is why later Yeshua, Jesus, says to his little friends, you know, if you get angry with your brother, it's the same as murder. And they say, what? You know, if you call your brother a fool, you deserve a trial. What? I call somebody a fool 20 times a day. Usually yelling at the TV, but it doesn't matter. If you look at a woman with lust, you've committed adultery without doing the act. And everybody goes, well, because all those things violate the law. And all you have to do is violate one law one time, and you're disqualified if you're on your own. So keep that in mind. Disobedience had consequences. The covenant was unique. You will be my people, I will be your God, if you keep my covenant. If you obey the covenant. If you don't go off on tangents. And when you meet these people in the land, you don't marry them, you don't do business with them, you don't hang out with them at the bar, you don't go camping with them, you don't go to the football game with them. You stay away from them. And most of all, you don't go to church with them. Don't go to their temples. Don't let them take you where they worship their gods, because you're not like that. It was unique. Only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life. And teach them to your children and your grandchildren. The things that you've seen, you have to teach your children and your grandchildren. You've seen signs and wonders. You've seen deliverance. Don't forget that. Teach it to your children and to your grandchildren. They built memorials everywhere they went. Right? in the Old Testament? Pile of stones. So God says, when your children ask you, why is this pile of stones here? You don't go, I don't know. You say, oh, let me tell you what happened here. Oh, this is where the people did this. This is where so-and-so did that. This is where the Jordan was crossed. This is where this and that happened. Because it's how you instruct your children. And you have to always be reminded. You know, one of my favorite quotes from Martin Luther is, he said, we have to hear the gospel over and over again because we're so mule-headed. You know, we hear the gospel and we say, oh, wow, that's awesome. And 2 days later you say, how was that again? What? Because we have to be reminded. That's why I always say, you know, if you don't think about the cross 20 times a day, you don't get what happened there. How can you think about anything else in the same way? So you have to teach the following generations because this is important. This is the covenant. So don't forget this. Especially concerning the day you stood before the Lord your God in Horeb. That's Mount Sinai. In Hebrew, Horeb means a desolate wasteland. So the law didn't come in this beautiful, you know, Garden of Eden kind of place. It came in a desolate wasteland. When the Lord said to me, meaning Moses, gather the people to me, and I will let them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days they live on the earth, and that they may teach their children. Hear me, fear me. Bring the people to the mountain so they can hear me. Bring the people to the mountain so when they see these signs and wonders, they're not going to say, oh, that's cool. Moses, how did you do that? So, you know, fear doesn't mean you're afraid. It means an awe. It means a powerful awe. Like, how could this be happening? So bring them so they can see it. So the people were gathered at Mount Sinai. God says, hear my words. Keep that in mind. Hear my words. You know, God's name is holy, right? When you read through the scriptures, you see so many things that he does for the sake of his name. For his name's sake. Because his name is holy. You can't even say his name because you're not worthy to say it. So in the Old Covenant, you couldn't say his name. That's why in some of those lyrics you see G-D. Because you can't write even the word God. Now, we're in a different situation because we can approach the throne boldly, the writer to the Hebrews. I love Hebrews. The writer to the Hebrews tells us. So he says, hear my words and fear the Lord. So in power, you're going to hear me. And in power, you're going to see the law given. And in power, you're going to learn that you have to obey. What happens when they rebel? There were